Hi there, Duke fans. Episode 604 of the DBR Duke Basketball Roundup. We're here to look ahead to a game that's coming up in just a few hours. By the way, check your feed. You may have, it's possible, just in terms of the timing of when we release episodes and stuff like that, you may have missed episode 603, which was our recap of the UVA game. That is not something to be missed. I'm just telling you right now, make sure
that was fun.
You have a listen. It was fun. Make sure you have a listen to what Donald and I said about that UVA game, that dunk fest that happened in Cameron against the Cavaliers. By the way, yes, he's Donald. I'm Jason. We're here now to preview Duke's game. It's a Saturday-Monday doubleheader, so to speak. So we got to turn around quickly and be ready for NC State. Duke travels all the way, long way to NC State. Like what? It's like 20 miles? Not even something like that? Like a 30-minute? I guess it depends on rush hour, how long it takes you to get on the bus to get over there to Raleigh. But yeah, Duke will be playing at NC State. Donald, as always, we ask you to tell us a little bit about Duke's opponent in terms of who they've played lately and how good they are and all that other kind of jazz. Tell me about the Wolfpack.
So the Wolfpack have not had a great year this year, but they're still hovering right in the middle of the ACC. They are 17-12 on the year, 9-9 in the ACC. They are 8th in the conference. They're literally smack in the middle of the conference. They're 75th in KenPom, 80th in the net. And the one thing about NC State is that they've done most of their damage at home. They are 12-4 this season at home. Their best wins overall against Wake Forest, Miami, Clemson, Virginia, and they've beaten Boston College twice. So some decent teams, but mostly teams that are within the ACC. Their losses, they don't have any really bad losses, but of course they have a lot of them. BYU, Ole Miss, Tennessee, UNC twice, Syracuse twice, Virginia, Pitt, Wake, FSU. Teams that I'm not sniffing my nose at any of these losses. Like, hey, those are pretty decent losses. But Jason, I think the one thing that we have to remember about this game, when we look at the non-conference schedule, and NC State has always been that team that kind of normally schedules, to be frank, a mediocre non-conference schedule. This year was no exception. They were bottom 60 in non-conference scheduling. So then their wins came against some really not good teams. And then we get into the ACC and they've been struggling back and forth. But the one thing that we have to say is that when we go to NC State, we usually have problems. Last year, Jason, if you recall, we went the first game of the year, we played them twice. First game of the year, against them, we went to NC State and we got the doors blown off of us. 84-60 was the final score. One of the worst losses of the year. Yeah. We then beat them the last week of the season in Cameron, 71-67. But make no mistake, these guys remember last year at NC State. After the game on Saturday night, Kyle Filipowski was before reporters. And they asked, hey, you're about to go to NC State. You have this Saturday-Monday double. What are your thoughts on this game? Are you guys ready to meet the expectations and the intensity? Because last year you guys weren't. And he goes, quote, absolutely. Just like some other teams, just like when we went to Miami, we remember what happened last year, and we've got to keep that in our mind, and we're going to make that a statement this year for sure. Just remembering how it went last year, we don't want to be embarrassed like that again, so we're going to do whatever we can to not make it that way. Jason, when we talk about that game, again, we learned our lesson against Miami. We went down there, we took care of business. The hope is that we do that this time, but of course this comes on the back of Saturday's game against Virginia where we played so well. It's ripe to have a game where you do well and then follow that up 48 hours later by doing poorly. But I will say this. Duke has had two Saturday-Monday doubles already this season, and then you have the Virginia game as a part of this third Saturday-Monday double. Five games so far. They are 5-0. They want to go 6-0 and really close out, and that way they can then, you know, start to worry about the rest of March. But this game is one that they've had circled. It's clear that they are not looking past this game, and neither should we.
Yeah, and by the way, those Saturday-Monday doubleheaders mimic the time off that you get, the amount of break you get in the NCAA tournament when you either play Thursday, Saturday, or Friday, Sunday. So you love it when your team is able to recover fairly quickly. Look, this is a Duke team that has, I don't want to say struggled with depth, but we haven't maybe had quite as much depth as people expected. We've struggled with injuries for sure. And we've been, you know, beset by the injury bug a lot this year. And as a result, you love the fact that this Duke team has done really well in these short, quick turns.
And I think the way that the game went against Virginia, how much we blew them out, and how we were able to work in some different combinations, we were able to get some guys some rest. I mean, we pulled starters with what, like 7 or 8, 6 minutes left in the game. We were able to do that. That is all about this game against NC State. Everyone's going to hopefully have their energy back. No one's going to be tired. No one logged heavy minutes against Virginia, and thankfully we remained relatively unscathed against Virginia. There's no, so that is, those are all things that luckily we played so well against Virginia that we were able to start during that game preparing for this game against NC State.
Well, and by the way, speaking of, sort of looking ahead a little bit, I think the fact that we had that bad blowout loss at NC State last year and that the guys are focused on making up for that could maybe prevent this team from doing the unthinkable and looking ahead to the weekend when Carolina comes to town. Put that aside. That game could be for first in the ACC in the regular season. It will not be for first in the ACC unless you take care of business against NC State. And this team needs to remember that as they prepare for this NC State game. Let me get into NC State really quickly and start with my, advanced analytics, my stats and such. By the way, it is worth noting, you talked a little bit about their record, the fact that they are sort of mired in the middle of the ACC. At one point, this NC State team looked like they might be a real contender. They were 7-4 in the conference at one point. Since then, they've lost 5 of their last 7 games. They've been swooning a pretty good bit. They are currently number 75 in KenPom. They have the number 79 offense, the number 80 defense. They're equally okay, but not great on either side of the ball. And they are a team, sort of befitting of a team like that. They play at a very average pace. They don't play particularly super fast on offense or defense, and they have the 136th overall pace of play in the NCAA. Look, when I look at the KenPom advanced stat page, it's real easy to tell what teams do really well and really poorly. Ken makes it easy for you. If the team is great at something, he puts it in green. And if they're bad at something, he puts it in red. And then there are gradations of green and red, depending on how good or how bad someone is. And then when you get to the middle, it sort of becomes like clear. And as I look at the NC State page, like almost everything's clear. It's all
Not a
like,
lot. Not it's not it's not colorful. Not a lot of color
no,
coding.
like if you look at UVA, the Virginia page, there's all this stuff on the defense in green, and there's all this stuff on the offense in red. And you're like,
Red
oh, this.
and blue in that like deep blue when you're like the bottom like 30
Right.
in the college basketball, they like put it in like deep dark blue. That one had some Crayolas. It's going to be sponsored by Crayola very, very soon.
Exactly. NC State's page is sponsored by, I don't know, who makes something white?
White out.
Yeah, Whiteout. Exactly. It's just, I looking at it, I'm like, what can I highlight about these guys? There's just not that much. They're not a very good shooting team. They hit about 34% of their 3-pointers. That's the national average is just under 34%. So they're right on the national average of threes. They are pretty mediocre from two. They only hit 49.4% of their 2-point shots. They're not the one thing they do, I guess, pretty good is they don't turn the ball over. They're not a great shooting team, but at least they hold on to the ball. They are ninth in the country, bright green on turnovers at turnover percentage. But they are fairly poor at getting to the free throw line, like bottom 100 in the country at their free throw rate, which is one of the reasons why they aren't a better offensive team. If you can usually withstand, being sort of average at some stuff, if you have a couple places that you can sort of get easy points. The fact that they aren't a great 3-point shooting team and they don't get their free throw line a lot means it's tough for them to get those easy points. On defense, again, there's not that much that stands out as unusual. They do give up a lot of free throws. They foul a pretty good bit, bottom 100 in the land at free throw rate allowed. They're fairly decent at forcing steals and getting turnovers, like top 75 in the country at that. Their opponents hit a little more than 35% from 3-point range, which is poor. It's not terrible, but it's poor. It's something that has bothered NC State this year. Probably the thing that stands out the most in terms of their, advanced stats is that this NC State team is super experienced. They've only got one freshman in their top 8 rotation. They got guys like DJ Horn, DJ Burns, Casey Morcell, who are fifth-year players, been around for a long time. Ken Pomeroy says that they are the 14th most experienced team in the country. So this is not an NC State team that is going to be, you know, new to playing a big-time opponent or new to anything that Duke shows them. These are guys, they got, let's just put it this way, they got a bunch of guys who probably can remember voting in the last election. Let's just put it that way.
So, Jason, I think the other thing about this is when you talk about NC State, this is a huge contrast from the UVA game. UVA is like, as one of our listeners mentioned on the last show, they won a game in the 40s, maybe the 50s. If you get to 60, you're probably going to win that game. With NC State, win or lose, they're still getting to 70 points more often than not. I think they only have five games where they have fewer than 70 points in a basketball game. So this team, again, they may not be efficient, but there's going to be more possessions. You're going to have opportunities to score against them, and they're going to want to make it kind of a track meet to kind of in hope that they can keep pace and kind of strike you down at the end. But the idea here is that when we go into some of the players, like these guys, as you mentioned, are experienced. We've heard their names before. And the one thing that we know that they're going to bring is physicality. They're going to bring intensity. That game last year against NC State, we weren't ready for that at all. And like DJ Burns went off, and it was kind of his coming out party in a way. But when he absolutely destroyed us with his physicality and we had nothing to match it, I know the coaching staff is focusing in on that and saying, this is what you need to do to stop these guys. And it's about getting in their face. It's about making them take bad shots and make bad decisions with the basketball. Even though they don't turn the ball over, making bad shots can be as good as a turnover if you play good defense. And as their defense has been playing so far this year, as you mentioned, it's not necessarily forcing a ton of turnovers, but we are forcing bad decisions with the basketball overall. And if that's the case, we can take that and really, really nail NC State with some good shooting and just taking care of the ball on offense.
Yeah, you mentioned DJ Burns. I think he's a fascinating player to watch. So DJ Burns is listed at 6'9", 275. I think 275 is his fasting weight. Dude is a load in the post. And the fascinating thing about him, I think, is not that he's not a guy who powers through you a lot. He is someone who uses that size, that tremendous, tremendous weight, to get a good position on the blocks. And then he hits like, you know, little hook shots, little fadeaways. He has tremendous arc on his shot, and he takes what, you know, you think would be difficult shots in the post, and he just hits them at a really, really high rate. He's a really interesting player. They play a lot of their offense through him. And by the way, be on the lookout. He's a really good passer. DJ Burnt, very underrated passer. He is second on their team in assists. Part of that is that they put the ball in his hands a lot, but part of that is he is really good. If you come and double him, he is really good at finding the guy who is open. This NC State team is it's an interesting kind of team because it's been cobbled together from so many different places. Of their top nine guys, of the nine guys in their team who average more than 8 minutes per game, eight of the nine did not start their careers at NC State. They have a freshman named Dennis Parker. Obviously, he's a freshman. He started at NC State. Every single other guy on their roster who, you know, plays significant minutes started someplace else. We're talking about guys coming from Missouri, Baylor, Arizona State, Stanford, Winthrop, Virginia, Kansas. They made a trade in the offseason with Clemson. Did you hear this? So Clemson got Jack Clark from NC State, and NC State got Ben Middlebrooks from Clemson. It wasn't actually a trade. Obviously, teams aren't allowed to do that, but it felt like a trade. It's just so interesting to me that Kevin Keats has sort of cobbled together this roster of all trans. Now, some of them have been there for, like Casey Morsell started out of Virginia for a couple of years. He's now been 3 years at NC State, so it's not like he's brand new to the program or anything like that. And DJ Burns has been there a couple. You know, these guys have been at NC State for a little while, but they started out someplace else. I just think it's really interesting roster construction. I'm not sure it's entirely working for them. Because like you said, they're, you know, they are the very definition of a mediocre ACC team. But it's just worth noting.
I think you mentioned some of the players that we're going to watch for. I want to talk about some of the guys who could affect everything from beyond the arc. Because there's three guys, really, that take a ton of threes. That's DJ Horn, Jaden Taylor, and Casey Morsell. of those three, DJ Horn is the only one that hits a decent clip. He hits 42.9% of his threes. The other guys are going to take a lot of threes, but they haven't been really making them all year. But having said that, what happens with shooters? They keep shooting, because if they get a streak, they're going to go off. And of course, they always love doing that at home. So when we talk about perimeter defense, those are three guys you need to hone in on. Those are the only guys who have shot over 100 threes this season. And I think in the case of DJ Horn, yeah, he's lethal. He's going to make them. He's also lethal from the line when he does get to the line. He's 84% shooter from the line. But Jaden Taylor and Casey Morsell beat us last year with his threes. And I remember talking on the show about how like, oh, this guy could just, he's hit, it feels like NC State is hitting everything. And Casey Morsell, I remember just screaming his name in vain many, many times last year. But he hits the third most threes. Jaden Taylor, second most threes, and these guys are going to shoot, but we want to keep them cold. If we could keep them cold, that demoralizes the entire team. And I think with DJ Burns, I think last year we didn't really go at him. And I feel like taking him out of the game, maybe through foul trouble, is the key, because Kevin Keats does not play a lot of his guys who hit two fouls, and especially DJ Burns. He's going to have some opportunities where he's going to want to go to the bench and get some rest. That's where we take advantage and kind of switch up what we're doing on defense, so that when he checks out of the game, it changes their dynamic a little bit, because you don't have a dude who's shaped like a brick wall in the middle. So I'm really curious to see how we approach that and how we kind of get some of these guys tired and out of the game.
Well, it's not just with DJ Burns. It's not just tired. He does get tired. It's not just that. It's can you get him in foul trouble? Mm-hmm. And I'll be very interested in seeing if Duke feeds Kyle Filipowski. I would love to see Duke feed Kyle Filipowski the way we have in recent games. Get him in the post. Get him working on DJ Burns. DJ Burns is, despite a guy that's 275, he has decent quickness, but I think Flip is going to be able to outquick him. And that could be a place, if you get DJ Burns in foul trouble, and he is prone to picking up fouls, it changes the complexion of how NC State attacks the game so completely that it really, their day could be over early, NC State, if DJ Burns gets in foul trouble and they don't really have another answer, another place to go. If their three-point shooters are not, unusually on, then NC State, I don't think, has a lot of different places they can go for offense if DJ Burns is in foul trouble.
I think also lined up with that is the fact that DJ Burns, as big as he is, as wide as he doesn't have an above the rim game, if that makes sense. Like you mentioned, he does a lot of sky hooks. He does a lot of layups. So while he does get a couple of blocks, he's not going to be the guy he's not going to try and be Shaq out there with his weight. He's not going to try and press you down and then try to dunk all over you. He's going to try and use his weight to get in position to kind of lay it in. I think that's where Flip and DJ Burns may have a more difficult, a more interesting battle, especially now that we've heard Flip basically say like, nah, we're focused. We're not going to get embarrassed. Now that I know that Flip is in that mindset, that's going to be a very intriguing matchup between the two of them.
Yeah, for sure. And it's worth noting. I mean, it's not like, I feel like we've talked down about NC State a little bit. This is not a terrible team.
Right.
Anytime you're playing on the road, road games are really, really tough, even against unranked opponents who are just 9-9 in the ACC. Ken Pomeroy says that Duke wins this game 78-71. That's not a blowout, people. That's not 25 points. That's not Jason Donald coming on here laughing and having a good time like we did about the UVA game. Mm-hmm. It is very, very possible this will be an entirely competitive game right down to the very end. Let's not forget, NC State played at North Carolina just yesterday and had a nice lead at halftime. They went off from three against Carolina in the first half. And it looked like NC State was going to pull off a huge upset. Now, Carolina just blew their doors off like in the first 10 minutes of the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And turned what, had been a game that State looked like they had a really good chance into a game where Carolina won it 79-70. But don't overlook NC State. I know Duke is not. I'm saying to the fans, it could be real easy after Duke won two games by 50 points last week to think, oh, we're going to take care of an NC State team that isn't sniffing the NCAA tournament. Oh, we'll take care of them easily. Road games, road games, road games. Never easy. Duke's two 25-point wins this past week, those both came in Cameron.
Look, There's only one game on the schedule. That game's at 7 p.m. It's on ESPN. It's at the RBC Center, whatever they call it, PNC Center. This many banks, many names, same gym. But this is the game. And again, we can talk all we want about March, you know, superlatives and March seedings and things like that. It starts with tonight. Let's get this and let's be like Flip. Everybody focus in. We're not getting embarrassed tonight. Let's go in and take care. Let's take care of the basketball. Let's take care of business. Let's be physical and intense and make it where all those people got to head home early.
I love it. I love it. We're going to take a quick break, folks. On the other side, we look ahead far in the future. Next season's ACC schedule. Who is Duke going to be playing? I'll tell you after the break. We're back from the break, and over the weekend, the ACC announced the schedule for next year. Not the dates, but just who you're playing and where you're playing them. And look, we are adding three new teams. Welcome to the ACC, Stanford, Cal, and SMU. The schedule has to account for three new teams, and it is a weird one. Duke has UNC, Miami, and Wake as home and home. No one else. No other home and home games other than those three, UNC, Miami, and Wake. By the way, Donald, I think we got a little bit screwed on that. That's a pretty tough slate. You know, I think all three of those teams likely to be in the top, I don't know, top five, top six in the conference next year, at least in the preseason rankings. And Duke has to play all three of them twice. You know, I guess there was no way we were going to get Georgia Tech, BC, and Notre Dame as our home and home opponents. But yeah, you know, this is.
I mean, we're always getting UNC, and we're cool with that. But like, yeah, the other ones is. It always feels like, yeah. When's the last time we played BC twice? It doesn't. Those teams that were like, oh yeah, we played BC. They're still in the conference. We see them once every 5 years. It feels like.
All right, tell me a little bit more about what you're seeing from this from the schedule that was released.
Well, it looks like when we talk about everything involving conference realignment and with the ACC, it centers around Cal and Stanford, and it seems like we're going to rotate with going to the Bay Area every other year to face Cal and Stanford. We get both of them at home next year. So we got Cal, Florida State, NC State, Notre Dame, Pitt, Stanford, and Virginia Tech just playing them at home. We're not going to play those teams on the road. The teams that we won't see in Cameron, but we're going to travel to face: Boston College, Clemson, Georgia Tech, Louisville, SMU, Syracuse, and Virginia. So it's interesting. When I the thing that I looked at, first of all, is of the three new teams where we would go. And it's, again, we're not going to California next year. It's probably going to be the year after. For me, of course, my dad lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We're going to go to SMU next year. Hopefully that's a weekend game. That'd be cool. If it's during the week, I don't care. I'll still go. But that's going to be a game that we're going to end up seeing in Dallas.
Hey, do you think I haven't looked at the entire schedule to see this, but I sort of get the impression that they're sort of trying to say you either go to SMU or you go to Cal and Stanford. You don't do both in one conference season. I think they're sort of alternating them like that.
I think so. And again, I think it more centers around Cal and Stanford. And if you think about it, Cal and Stanford, when you look at some of their teams, it feels like they're going to set those up in kind of clumps. So they can come over and kind of do, you know, the Saturday, Monday doubles. They're not going to have one at home and one on the road unless they're playing a home and home against each other. Like, yeah, they're going to have it where they come over and they play a Duke and then a Wake Forest, or they'll play at UNC and at NC State and make it where they're in clumps traveling for some of these games and kind of minimize the travel. When it comes to SMU, though, I feel like they're on the opposite side. They're going to be ones that are going to have to do a lot of traveling because they're in the middle of everything. So they're going to be a team that people can see in a year, but not the Bay Area teams. I kind of like that. I think that's fine. I almost kind of wish that the California trip was next year to kind of just, hey, if you're going to introduce it, just give it to us and not make us wait. They're making us wait in football for them. We're getting SMU next year and not Cal and Stanford on the road. So I'm interested to see how that continues to work out, because this conference realignment, as we know, is probably not done. There's still a lot that's still hanging in the balance with regards to the FSU ACC lawsuit and how that, you know, falls out. But I do think that getting SMU on the road, it'll be interesting because I wonder how they prepare themselves for life in the ACC.
Yeah, by the way, in terms of distances, like Duke to SMU is almost the same as Duke to Notre Dame. It's just not that huge of a difference. And it's not entirely different from like Duke to Syracuse. And frankly, like Miami or Florida State or Georgia Tech, I think like Georgia Tech is probably closer to SMU than they are to Syracuse. So you're right.
I was about to say Miami to Boston College, I think at one point was the longest trip in the ACC.
Well, yeah, now that's going to be Miami to Stanford or Cal. Yeah, for sure. But bottom line is, you know, we feel like SMU is further over there. The reality is they're not hugely different from Notre Dame, and we don't do anything special scheduling-wise for Notre Dame. Now, you know, my biggest takeaway from looking at this schedule is I was looking at who Duke played on the road. Those are always the most difficult games. And we have, you know, sort of the toughest road opponents we have there, obviously. We have UNC, Miami, and Wake. And frankly, those may be our three toughest road opponents. but we also have the other ones that sort of looked to me that jumped off the page immediately were Virginia and Clemson. Virginia, it feels like, has a lot of work to do to be the team they were a few years ago. They're probably going to lose Reese Beekman. There may be other guys that they lose. Ryan Dunn, most people think, is going to enter the NBA draft. So I feel like Virginia may not be as tough as we think they would be. Clemson's going to lose a lot of excellent players this year. I mean, who knows who collects what in the transfer portal and stuff like that. Brad Brownell has shown that he's going to make Clemson into a good team every single year. But I feel like, in general, this road schedule for Duke is not that tough. We don't have Florida State. We don't have Virginia Tech. We don't have NC State, which are three places that it just feels like no matter how those teams are, no matter how good or bad FSU, Virginia Tech, and NC State are, Duke seems to have trouble playing those guys on the road, at least. So I'm kind of glad for that. And then you were talking about SMU selfishly wanting Duke to play there. I get Duke playing Georgia Tech in Atlanta. I love it when Duke plays Georgia Tech in Atlanta. It's so easy for me.
Like Sam gets Boston College. So the three of us get at least a game that we know that we can travel to. I also think, Jason, again, in light of what we discussed with NC State and how it's kind of a, you know, we kind of look at some of these revenge opportunities. We lost this year at UNC. Of course, we play them at UNC every year. That will be the final game of the season, so we'll get to avenge that. We go to Wake Forest, of course. Everyone except us has been talking about Wake Forest for the last 2 weeks, it seems like, at this point. That'll be a game that's circled on the calendar for everybody. Expect that to be a weekend game for sure. And then also Georgia Tech. We played like crap against Georgia Tech. Jason, you had to see it live, unfortunately. And hopefully this next year it'll be a little bit different. It'll be a little bit more of an easier game for you to watch. But that's, again, a game that, you know, guys will go in and say, hey, this will be a game that we need to understand that we can't come in and not be lackadaisical. We have to come in with intensity because Georgia Tech's going to do the same thing. I really do like what Damon Stoudemire is kind of building there, the kind of roots that they're building there down in Georgia Tech, the kind of style of play that they're having is something that's really going to match up with a lot of teams in the ACC next year.
You know, by the way, someone pointed out that Georgia Tech has like three wins against teams in the top 15. Like, it's crazy. Georgia Tech is not that good a team, but they have shown that at times they can be really, really good. Hey, two other really, really super quick things I wanted to mention. It's worth noting, if you're someone who mostly pays attention to Duke and doesn't really pay attention to the rest of the ACC, the two ACC teams on the bubble, not really on the bubble, I guess. Yeah, Clemson and Wake Forest, I was going to say, each had disastrous weeks. Clemson played only one game. They lost to Notre Dame. Wake Forest played two games. They lost both of them. Like, literally, Wake Forest beat Duke. Everyone went, oh, they're in the field now. They got nothing to worry about. They're making the NCAA tournament. They immediately turned around and lost two games. They lost to Notre Dame and to Virginia Tech, both those games on the road. They were beating Virginia Tech by like 10 points at one point in that game, and they just completely gacked it up in the second half, and Tech actually won going away. You know, as much as Duke has a big week against NC State and North Carolina, both Clemson and Wake, not so much Clemson, but Wake especially, still has work to do. Virginia still has work to do. I mean, the ACC got to get five. Come on, we got to get five teams in this tournament, don't we? It's very, very frustrating.
I think the thing about Virginia especially, is that they've had that streak of, what was it, four and five games where they've scored less than 40 points, or less than 50 points, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they need to, I mean, the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee is not going to pick a team that they don't feel is going to give anybody a good game because they can't score more than 50 points. That's just the reality of it. So UVA has, they only have one more game left. I believe it's against Clemson this coming weekend. They skipped the midweek game this week. And then they have the NCAA or the ACC tournament. They have to show that they can score, because the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee is not about merits all the time. Sometimes they're like, hey, which team is going to give us a good matchup against somebody else? Who do we think can come in and provide some sort of pageantry, some sort of show? They're not here to watch a game go 39 to 36. They're just not. They need to figure out a way to score some points, because if they don't, they will be sitting at home.
Yeah, by the way, Virginia doesn't have Clemson. They've got Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, excuse Virginia me. Has.
Yeah, but Clemson and Wake play each other at the very end of the weekend. By the way, there's a reason you need to pay attention to all these games. There's still too many permutations to figure it all out. But if Duke and UNC end up tied at the top of the ACC standings, something that seems at least somewhat likely, then you start to have to look at, okay, how did they do against the next team in the standings to figure out who gets the ACC number one seed? And in that case, where Wake Forest, where Clemson finishes in the standings, where Pittsburgh finishes in the standings, becomes really, really important to Duke, because there are certain teams that we get the tiebreaker, and there are certain teams where UNC gets the tiebreaker. Virginia doesn't matter to either one of us. Virginia's going to finish third in the conference. They don't matter to either one of us because we both beat them. But those next teams, the Syracuse, the Wake Forest, the Clemson, the Pittsburghs, those are teams where Duke and UNC's records are divergent enough that it will determine who gets the number one seed. So be on the lookout. I'm not going to get into all the details of it, but that's just something to be on the lookout for as we approach the weekend. But we're not focused on the weekend. We're focused on Monday against NC State. All right. Blue Devils, go out there, keep on beating teams by 25 points. I need to see more Spencer Hubbard. I want to see another three-pointer by Spencer Hubbard. That happens when the Blue Devils wipe the doors off the NC State Wolfpack. You heard it here. I am Jason. He is Donald. This is the Duke Band playing us on our way to Raleigh. Take us home, boys.